Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Ryan LaPlante, and I'm one of the crazy founders of Dumb Dumbs and Dice, the production company that's made the video you're watching or the podcast you're listening to right now. Now, we're clearly busy. We're producing 5 weekly podcasts: Dumb Dumbs and Dragons, Blood and Syrup, The Mythos Mysteries, Warhammer 40,000, The Valentine Heresy, and Curse Code and Crown, as well as 3 event podcasts with miniseries releases scheduled at random intervals: Dumb Scum and Villainy, One Shots, and the bad movie review show, Garbage Town the Movie Podcast. But we want to take this time to invite you to become a part of our company and a part of our Patreon at patreon.com/dumbdumbdice. You can get access to our Discord, access to exclusive DM and character chats. You can get the chance to name characters in our shows. You can even become a recurring NPC and hear yourself interacting with our characters each week through the voice of Tom. You can become a patron for as little as $1, and there's great value for you at even that level. So please join the Dumb Dumbs and Dice family and help us make even more content in a way that you are guaranteed to love. That's patreon.com/dumbdumbdice. DUMBDUMBDICE. So let's do something dumb together, and thanks for being part of our stories.
I am Executron, god of merchandising, and I came into existence because Dumb Dumbs and Dice has its own merchandise. That's a god pun. Get it? Dice? Merchandise? Anyways, you can get t-shirts, hoodies, spiral notebooks, clocks, wall art, throw pillows, bags, and even stickers emblazoned with your favorite Dumb Dumbs and Dice characters and their catchphrases. Go to redbubble.com/people/dumbdumbdice. That's DUMBDUMBDICE. One more time for the mortals in the back. redbubble.com/people/dumbdumbdice. Get your merchandise today.
Welcome back, children of the night, to Blood and Syrup, a Vampire the Masquerade live play podcast. I am your host, Count Vlad von Lestat, drinker of blood, keeper of the chronicle, and all around a spooky dude. The Coultry have collected their gear and formed their plans for assaulting Oliver Twists. Iris determined Dr. Skull could jump between bodies by cutting his head off. Ridley knocked over a jewelry store with the Bear Boys to get them a supply of silver. And Everett found a dealer and sourced some drac in case Iris needed to use the demon to save the day. What will happen once the assault has begun? Find out in the season finale of Blood and Syrup. And abandon hope, all ye who listen here.
You awake to an important night, a night that in a lot of ways your coterie has been working toward since the very beginning. Tonight is the night that you assault the orphan compound and attempt to wipe them from the face of Montreal, the city of black miracles. It's your chance to carve out a part of this city for yourselves, to gain the favor of the prince, though whether or not you actually want that is still a question. But more importantly, it's a chance to get one of your biggest foes off your backs, get some answers finally to the questions that have been plaguing you. And maybe, just maybe, if you've got time and, you know, people still have a spare hand to carry them, rescue Iggy Dunn. You have major preparations. You have obtained silver to use in explosives. You have helped Dr. Skull's spirit realize that it can jump from body to body. You have obtained drac as a backup for Iris, who will be leading the Blood Talon
Wolf Team Bravo,
the Blood Talons in distraction efforts. And you've sent some of the Silver Foxes ahead to be essentially sleeper agents, weaponless, but sleeper agents nonetheless, within the facility itself. This is the evening you make your attack. Please roll a rouse check.
I win.
I don't.
Me hungry.
No, great. No. What are your, as is always our way with the show, I must ask, what are your outfits for this this grand battle?
Everett's just got the one.
I was going to say,
long coat and his hat, dress shirt and slacks.
If Ridley had last night and knew that they were going to carry the assault tonight, he probably would have placed a call to the Silver Foxes and had them pick up, if he could, like a flak vest of some kind for himself and Everett. Because I feel like we're vampires, but still putting holes in you kind of sucks.
Yep.
I think other than that, he accidentally, because his references are like 70s movies, ends up dressed kind of like Archer. Like he's got a tactical like turtleneck on with like full sleeves that's black. And he's wearing like, they're black pants, but they're almost slacks in a way that seems like inappropriate. Bell bottoms. Yeah, like they're a little bell-bottomy, and he's got his flak vest. And then he's got boots with like heels. He can still run in them, but they're very like Italian. And he's traded his regular kind of thick glasses for like equivalent sunglasses that have like, instead of the fully mirrored, they're like the weird brown sheen that was very 70s over like aviators.
Yeah.
And I think he got a bandana he can tie around his mouth that just has a big smiley face on the front. And he has hand painted two little fangs out of the smiley face mouth.
Yeah. Alarmingly, like Dederick just had this on hand. You didn't need to seek too far. It's just like, I need a bandana. Like said to the Silver Fox, it's like, I need a bandana with a smiley face. And Dederick was like, oh yeah, I've got lots. We can pick. I just think they're fun. He doesn't wear them. He just has them.
So that, yeah, then his hair was also done by Dederick, and it's basically Conan O'Brien's hairstyle. Like it's like a big,
big
it's your
wave.
It's your battle pompadour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Amazing. And I assume you're wearing your gauntlets.
Yeah, he'll just start with them on. There's no need to fuck around.
Right.
And if it was possible, he'd probably have like a duffel of shotguns, silver bullets that he could just give to the Silver Foxes if they need them inside.
Sure. Yeah. We can say you've got a duffel slung over your back. And then I think you probably have like two of those clip-on shotguns just hanging.
Great.
21 Jump Street style.
Yep.
In case you're going to prom. Everett, the Silver Foxes deliver the same outfit they brought for you before, just like the nice version of all the stuff you have. But this time they bring you a six-pack of everything. And there's just a note that says, we've noticed you're kind of hard on clothes, so we brought some extras.
Oh. Huh. Well, that was nice. And I'll get changed.
Sure. So flak vest, trench coat, detective hat. Anything else? Do you have like bullet bandoliers or anything, or like extra? Because you're a revolver and automatic guy, right?
I can't remember why, but I believe I only have the revolver now.
Right. Okay.
And I think I'm out of silver bullets, so I think it's just standard ammunition.
Well, I think we got silver, so yeah. That,
so
that's
silver
your
bullets have been
okay.
Delivered.
So yep. Silver meant silver bullets. Okay, great. So
and then, I got an order of shotguns. So
yeah,
if you need
additional armaments, like basically the Silver Foxes, being a biker gang themselves, have access to a bunch of shit.
Maybe like a hunting rifle then.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Cool.
Just a bolt action hunting rifle.
Cool.
I was going to say, are we going full Winchester? Are you going classic Western Everett?
No, it'll be bolt action. Instead of lever action, and it'll have like a scope, like it is legit for like hunting deer, except we have silver rounds now for it, basically.
Yeah. Gotcha. And Iris, what is Combat Iris's outfit?
Yeah, I probably texted Emily to send me over options for like badass Charlize Theron, circa like a mix of Fast and Furious with Atomic Blonde with Old Guard, kind of just like that aesthetic. Nice. It's like higher end biker, I guess, is kind of
sure,
what
yeah,
her
yeah,
badass
yeah.
aesthetic is, you know?
Yeah.
Where gotcha. It's like pretending to be a biker with like leather jacket and like fancy slacks or jeans, you know, where it's like not biker, but biker.
Yeah. Emily includes a note being like, hey, hopefully some of these will work. Incidentally, it seems that you have a lot of the same fashion sense as Selena, that's And then it just kind of trails off. Yeah, you unfortunately recognize the exact outfit Selena was wearing. But fresh. You flip through them. There's one you don't immediately recognize, and then you realize it's an Italian job outfit, and you realize that Emily really dug deep on, like, if Charlize's been in an action film, she's got an outfit for you from it. Ultimately, like, fancy biker. So honestly, basically, Cate Blanchett in Ocean's 8. Right? Is that kind of what we're thinking? Like the most expensive?
She was in power suits more than she was in, like,
I'm more so mad when she was biking. She was wearing, like, the fanciest biker outfit I've ever seen. It was clearly, like, the designer version of a leather reinforced jacket. Okay, cool.
It's like Hollywood's version of a low rent hitman.
Exactly. Like, it's all designer brand names off the runway. And it's like, for biking, as long as you never fall or get it dirty. Okay, cool. So yeah, so you're all loaded up with that. Do you think you would take any weapons with you, Iris, knowing that you do have 3/4 of a drac vial?
Yeah, because I want that to be a last resort. So
yep.
If I could, like, stash a, not that I'd be any good with it, but stash, like, a knife somewhere and that little pistol.
Sure. Yep. All right, so you've got, like,
you're not a gun person. Do you want a shotgun or an Uzi? These tend to be the more, one could say, spray and pray type weapons if things go down.
I don't know where I could hide that.
Well, you're going to rob a store with an army of werewolves. I don't think you need to hide the gun.
You're not going to need to hide it for long. You're going to roll up there in a very chatty taxi and step out, and you will be using your weapon very shortly after.
Okay, well, whatever you guys think is best.
So I think given that we've already kind of got shotguns covered, I think Iris having, like, a small semi-automatic, like,
we'll go with the Tech 9, the classic, exactly. Like, Uzi, like, kind of
the drive-by gun, the one that literally you pull the trigger and it just spits out a full clip, can't really aim it, you know, the GoldenEye club of modern weapons.
Yeah, Iris, I'm sorry. We're going to have to send you in a cab, because if you use your Uber for this, there's going to be a lot of homicides at the other end. We might get clear. We might not. You're not going to like the cab driver, but you can't kill him because he works for us. Okay?
Oh, fine.
Iris, do you send any final messages to Emily, who will not be participating in the assault?
Just thank you for everything. If things go bad, you've been the best. Heart emojis all over.
Man, she's going to read a lot into those. The cab pulls up outside the hospital, and you hop in. I don't think Iris hops into anything. You know, casually step in to the cab. As it begins to pull away, the other door opens and Janice Smythe slips in beside you, holding a baseball bat. And she says, "Hey, looks like you're up to no good, and I wanted to help. I don't want you to get hurt. I love you." Ridley and Everett, you're downstairs still getting ready. So you're not present for this.
I think moment. Ridley down there is like, "Oh, wait, should we send a fucking a dopey with her, like Dr. Skull? Because I feel like having him sneak in when we're already in is kind of a bad move."
Sure. Let's maybe find some clothes. I grab, like, a doctor's, like, lab coat. Sure. And someone's left, like, their gym bag or something like that.
Like, lost and found.
So he's in, like, a fucking t-shirt and shorts. And a doctor's lab coat and no shoes. And this is an old man corpse?
Yeah.
Super.
We'll just tell him to run. Point it towards the cab area so he can go find her and jump in.
He's like, all right, thanks, guys. Let's do this. And then he holds up his little withered hands and he's written in Sharpie Dr. Skull on the knuckles.
As soon as the hands come up, Everett's hands, like, come down and, like, bring his hands back down. It's like, just go. Do not draw attention to yourself.
Ridley will sling a duffel bag over him and go, the silver bomb is in here. Put it in your next body, not this one.
All right. go Team Skull. And then he takes off running, which is like watching a skeleton run because he's a skinny little old man. Iris, Janice is, she is decked out in roller derby gear. She's got like, she's not wearing the skates, obviously, but she's got the pads. She's wearing a helmet. She's got goggles and she's got a baseball bat.
Janice, hi. Wow, you look great. It's so good to see you. Thank you for all the gifts. They've been lovely.
Yeah, thanks. I'm glad you like them. And she like is clearly like vaguely pale from having. She's like, I've got more for you.
No, not here.
Listen, it's in my fridge.
Listen, sweetie. I don't want you hurting yourself. It's too much.
But, okay? But I don't want them to hurt you.
But listen, you need to not be a part of this. Okay? So I will be back and we'll talk later. I promise. I'll dedicate a whole 15 minutes to you.
And from the front seat, little Timmy Jones just like, oh, hey, 15 minutes with a celebrity is pretty good. You know, I would say you're getting a pretty good deal here. Also, I was told by my boss that there was only really room for one back here. So, you know, I'm supposed to take her. And I mean, if you want to do a ride share or something, that's cool. But that's not really how taxis work unless the person who got in first wants it to. So I think you should probably get out. Sounds kind of like she's rejecting you. You know, I've been rejected like this before, too. It's a bit of a bummer. But, you know, just sometimes you got to move on.
Like, thank you.
Yeah. Oh, wait, sorry, I should ask, which one of you is Iris Dunn? If it's actually you, then I got it wrong, in which case you have to leave, leather jacket lady.
No. Janice, I'm so sorry. Do you mind?
And she just, like, her face falls and her expression darkens, and she says, no, of course not. Don't mind at all. And
I'm gonna die.
Gets out of the cab and slams the door. He's like, oh wow, I'm really glad you're Iris. I'd have felt really
Timmy,
bad if
drive.
Yeah, all right, fair enough. With that, Timmy guns the engine, at which point an old man slams into the side of the cab and says, oh no, looks like this guy wants to get in too. All right, let's deal with that. So after a few more minutes of awkward fumbling, Timmy and Iris sort out the matter of the gym clothes clad doctor coat wearing Dr. Skull, who unfortunately does smell of previously enjoyed gym wear and, you know, formaldehyde, who gets in next to Iris in the backseat. With that, team's like, all right, well, it looks like we got everyone in here. So it looks like I'm driving you to, oh no, we're going back to that money place. You know, that's a dangerous habit. They take a lot more off your check than you'd think. Iris, you've spent a lot of time in Ubers, and Emily always gets you like an Uber Black. So you get like the best possible, or Uber XL, like the best possible Ubers. And goddamn, do you hate having to live through this? This may be the hardest battle you face today. Is there anything you attempt to do in this cab to make it slightly more livable for you on this ride?
No, I think she's just resigned and like just kind of slumps.
Amazing. It's just like the stoic face straight ahead as like Dr. Skull yammers in one ear and little Timmy Jones yammers over his shoulder in the other. And the screen in front of you continues to just blast ads. He hasn't had it replaced yet. It's been a busy few days. All right. Everett and Ridley, how do you want to attempt to breach the garage?
Well, the plan's still that we head in through the junkyard sort of area behind the bar.
Yeah, sorry,
right?
That's what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we probably have like brought like bolt cutters or chain cutters or something like that kind of in the duffel. So the idea is we get back there, we hit a corner nobody can see, kind of snip it open.
Yeah.
Then we got to see the lay of the land once.
I think we literally are like taking like the long way, like just wide berth, get to the rear of that place, no matter how far back that may be.
Yeah, we'll park a block away
inside, and then work our way in.
Okay, sure. So, to both of your collective relief, with little Timmy Jones being busy driving Iris, something that Everett insisted upon. Dinkeldorf himself arrives in his old cab, his sort of his classic, the one that started it all. He's got some gauze wrapped over one eye, he's got like his fingers are also bound in a thing. He looks a little bit worse for the wear.
What's going on,
my friend Nathan? Hey, how are you?
Hey guys, you know, I'm alive, which is a start. I ran into some trouble, you know, the night of all the attacks. Things went not great for me after saw you guys.
What kind of trouble?
Oh, just like a building fell and kind of fucked me up and fucked the cab up. And, like, the cab's in rough shape too, but certainly manageable, be said. But you know, I don't want to leave you guys in a lurch tonight. It seems like this is an important piece of business. So
Everett's just going to like lean down to like the driver's side window before getting in and just like really kind of look him squarely and say, no one's giving you any problems.
He smiles and he says, no, Mr. Fry, honestly, for years that would have been the case, but this time just a run of the mill building fell on my car.
Well, all right. Feel better soon. You up for a little drive?
That's why I'm here. Gentlemen, hop in. I'm sorry I couldn't send you my best driver, but I understand you've sent him for Miss Dunn.
Yeah, we sent him. You know, you're off Everett.
And he starts to smile and he's like, she's going to fucking hate that. All right, gentlemen, hop in. You guys want some waters?
No, but I like this crafty competition with the other cars. You know, you're a crafty guy. I think Ridley will get in the front. He'll be like, now, the other thing that I want to tell you is, basically, within about 5 blocks of where we're going, don't send any other cars for the rest of the night unless it's me who calls you for them. I don't want you or any of your boys having a bad time.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I'll be sure to make them steer clear, literally and figuratively.
Good, good. That's fucking good. Everett, do you own any property or anything if you die that you want some sort of last will and testament for?
What?
You don't own anything, right?
No, not around here, no.
Okay, well, Nathan, I'm going to give you the number to some of the bear boys that I know. They're known as the Silver Foxes now. If I go down, they know what we own, so they can help you kind of build an empire with it, with them.
Thanks, man. That's pretty big. Honestly, even just get me started on the company. It's been been a weird few weeks, but you know, it's a hell of a lot better than driving for someone else. You know, it's nice to drive for yourself for a change. All right, gents, let's get about it for you. And he puts it into gear. What song do you request for the? Do you have like amp up music? Do you have a track?
I think Ridley just hits randomize on the system because he is like can hit that because it's the symbol that just shows the like weird little like wavy thing, and it's just the Friends theme song that comes on.
All right, amazing. So I'll be there for you by the refreshments. Just starts playing, and Nathan just kind of chuckles as he pulls away, and he's like, you know, like 4 or 5 lines into this, in the second verse of this song, they say your mama told you there'd be days like these, but the motherfuckers already said no one told you life was gonna be this way. Honestly, ruin the show for me. And then he throws it into gear and rolls off towards the bar. Iris, you arrive outside the money pit, a truly shoddy. They're sort of in this neighborhood. There are three cash cashing places, and this is the worst of the three. It is also the insides have been crudely washed, but you can still see blood smears on the walls, and there's cardboard over the window. Lycanon rolls up with a few of the other Blood Talons, kind of a distance. And he says, he kind of like lumbers out of, he pulls up in a Prius, and he kind of like steps out of it, and his massive form is, you know, kind of dwarfs the car. And he just kind of sees you, you're looking, and he's like, what? I really care about the environment. And he kind of slams the door. There's a slick motorcycle pulls up next to him, and Celine steps off doing that thing where, like, it's usually like female assassins in movies where she like kicks her leg over the back and then just throws her helmet off. You're horrified to discover you are wearing the exact same outfit. And there's just a moment of like just like narrowed eyes. She just kind of looks at you and she says, nice outfit. It's a shame Emily isn't here to see you knocking off my look.
Well, yeah, she's the one that picked it out.
And Celine's eyes like narrow. That had not occurred to her, and that is very upsetting. Meanwhile, Lacanon has gone around to the trunk. He's wearing just like cargo pants, belted, no shirt. He's wearing a sort of like a tactical vest, just open. And it's just got knives. It's just like, it's like a hunting vest, just like a bunch of knives. He flips open the back of the trunk, reaches in, and he pulls out a single-headed, large silver axe, that is, very like beautifully inlaid. And he just leans in and kisses the blade, sort of throws it over one shoulder. And he's like, well, Iris, I'm real sorry. There's no appropriate moon for us to do this up, you know, wolf style. But rest assured, we didn't come by the name Blood Talons from not fucking shit up. And then he lifts the axe and kind of raises his hands out. He's like, am I right? And there's like lots of like yelling and cheering as the rest of the wolves get out. And they're armed with like a variety of everyone's bringing like melee weapons. No one's carrying like ranged weapons. And so he says, so if I understand correctly, the plan is we're gonna go smash up this money mart, or is the guy gonna call in that we're smashing up the money mart and then we just fuck up whoever comes along?
I mean, I feel like we gotta make it real, so let's we'll smash up a few things. This money mart isn't that reputable.
He looks at the sun and says, the money pit. Well, that's a bit on the nose. All right, folks, you heard the lady. Let's wreck some shit. And with that, they charge forward and start smashing shit. And from inside, you just hear someone go, oh, hey, you're here. That's great. Look, I'm fully ready. Oh, God, my windows. And suddenly the call goes from like a controlled like tee-hee-hee, I'm in on it, to like, oh, God, it's happening again. No, yeah, those Triple X guys, they're here. They're, oh, God, they're smashing everything. And you hear a door slam. The wolves just fucking tear this place apart.
Yay.
Meanwhile, Nathan drops you off a few blocks from the Oliver Twist. And he's like, I could have sworn this place had a different name like a week ago. Yeah, honestly, it'll be in better hands with you guys. Listen, you play it safe, all right? Don't get yourselves killed. You're my favorite customers. And I'll be there for you when the rain starts. Oh, fuck, it's stuck in my head now. It's stuck in my head now. I'm just saying the lyrics. Jesus, all right. Well, good luck.
All right, you have a good night there, Nathan. Take care.
Thanks.
Stay safe out there, friend.
Yeah. Good luck. And the two of you begin to move up. How are you going to try and approach the back of the sort of junkyard?
I think Everett will be sighting ahead with the rifle scope.
Okay. Cool.
Trying to spot people in the distance before moving up after checking it's clear.
Cool.
Yeah, I think Ridley, yeah, would kind of be probably ranging ahead within that range to take out anybody if they need to. But I imagine if there's like a lateral alley or like between
buildings. Yeah, there's definitely some ways to get up there. The junkyard is kind of like out behind the building and kind of faces onto some sort of wooded property. So there is definitely like an approach vector. It's as we talked about, it's kind of at the end of a road off a cul-de-sac kind of thing. So it is a little bit out
there. We would want
to
come in from the woods to the back of the junkyard.
Yeah. Okay. So, Everett, you see a large, burly woman, just kind of like looking at a busted up pickup truck. She's clearly kind of like just, she's got a clipboard in hand. She's got, a vaporizer in the other hand. And she's taking long drags off it. And you see kind of that classic, like double wisp of vapor coming off, her lips as she is clearly sizing the car up, for dismantling. She's close to the area that Ridley is sneaking up to, but is not actively patrolling. What do you do?
Is she alone? If I do a quick scan, does she appear?
You can
alone?
See other, there are definitely other orphans like elsewhere in the junkyard going about various things. Mm-hmm. Two of them are currently, like sledgehammering, a really, really like a two bikes that clearly crashed together. Mm-hmm. So they're making a lot of noise. They're tied up doing that. And you can see patrols. There are people with like flashlights wandering around, but she's the clearest danger and the closest danger.
Then I would keep her sighted, but I would also let Ridley do his work, do his thing. The longer we can keep quiet, the better.
Cool.
Because this rifle's going to crack off really loud when I fire it. So.
Yeah. You guys receive a text message from Iris that the store is under attack. You get one from Brad Spitz a moment later being like, oh God, help, a bunch of people are legitimately smashing up my store.
I think Ridley, realizing he can't read any of these texts and realizing that his lack of communication with Everett was fucking stupid, would take out one of his burner phones and like plug headphones into it and just call Everett so that they kind of have the cell phone equivalent of radios so the sniper can tell him what the fuck's going on.
Right.
Evening, Ridley.
Yeah, so I got a bunch of texts, which is sort of like nothing. What's going on?
Iris has started the attack on the money pit.
Well, hopefully some of these fucking vampire orphans will fuck off, and then we can get this done a bit quicker.
No one's making a move just yet. Looks like the biggest threat is just ahead of you. You see that big, big woman by the truck?
Yeah, I fucking see her.
Yeah, she's the biggest threat in our way right now. There's a couple guys over there with the sledgehammers, and there's some patrols going on. I'm hoping this attack will peel some of them off. I've got my sights on her in case things get tricky, but I think you're well suited to take her out.
All right, I'll give it a second in case something goes off with that old alarm at a fucking store business, and then yeah, I'll go in and make a fucking move.
You hear a commotion out front and the roar of engines. There's also a large sort of garage door down a ramp beyond the junkyard that seems to coil upward, and four motorcycles come shooting out of that, kind of veer off out an exit from the junkyard and are clearly headed to the headed to deal with the alarm, but otherwise everyone goes about their business. You get the sense that protection calls are pretty standard around these parts. So she goes back, like no one blinks an eye. They might like look up for a second, but then they're back to work.
All right, they don't know how bad it's about to be just yet.
Yeah, should we hold until they kill the first wave and the second one has to go? That feels smart to me, but what do you think?
I'm fine to wait for now, but we're gonna need to make the most of this distraction soon.
Yeah. I'm saying second wave goes fucking chaos, but yeah, let's wait till they know they might need to send more than four fucking guys.
So you fall into an awkward silence as you wait. Ridley, are you working on the fence at this point, or are you still waiting?
I think he would wait, and he would start working on the fence the moment he starts hearing the roar of next wave of motorcycles, because then sound and fury will cover it.
Iris, you're watching the Blood Talons just fucking wreck this store, and everything seems to be going according to plan. It's weird being this far away from the action, but also this is kind of like a good spot for you, ultimately, I think, not being directly on the front line. You can hear the roar of motorcycles in the distance, so it sounds like the distraction has worked. And from inside the store, like Cannon just like knocks down a shelf with his axe, turns around and gives you like an enthusiastic thumbs up. Do you respond to it at all?
Yeah, I probably awkwardly, because it's not what Iris does. She just kind of gives it like a
like an awkward thumbs up.
Yeah.
So, kind of like half smiling, like trying just to be like a good member of the pack. You give him a thumbs up. You see, his eyes go wide in horror, a moment before you feel the impact of the explosion. But beside you, like Hannon's car explodes, Celine's bike explodes, and the rest of the Bloodtown's vehicles erupt in fireballs. I'm going to need from you, my friend, a
great
dexterity and, honestly, I think probably survival. This is just like, how hurt do you get when you get blown to the ground kind of situation?
So, what, both of them are on hunger die. Is that a problem?
No, my friend, that's very good.
No successes.
All right. So, Iris, you take 4 points of superficial and...
Superficial is the one / aggravated is the dangerous one. Yeah. Is the X.
So take 4 points of aggravated damage as you get exploded. You go flying across the pavement. Luckily, your designer leathers catch a bit of it. You feel your hair burn as well as your flesh, but you're quickly able to kind of like... You find like firm hands patting you down as you kind of stop, drop, and roll. Of all people, it's Celina who pulls you to your feet after like helping pat you down. I guess she'd probably like check on the ground before she lifts you up. And she just says, are you good? Are you alive? I don't know how fucking vampires work.
I'm still ticking, I think.
All right, good enough. And she drags you to your feet. The wolves, meanwhile, have run out and seem just like completely astounded that this has happened. At which point the bikes arrive. That's when the shooting starts. The wolves let out a battle cry, but they've clearly been caught flat-footed by the explosion of their vehicles. The bikers begin to shoot. So they're kind of like doing that awkward roadie run from Gears of War where they kind of crouch over and rush. But a couple of them go down the fight begins. Celina immediately ditches you. Like the second the fight starts, she's just done with you, kind of darting around the side of the building. You find yourself alone standing in a circle of flame as a battle erupts. What do you do?
I feel like I'm no help in kind of just assessing like if I can do anything to pull myself together, and I kind of don't want to rush in because I'm not helpful or useful or
100%. That makes
sense. This doesn't feel like something to risk my life and having to take drag for it.
100%. So I think observing it and seeing the way it's going, as much as the Blood Talons look to be at a disadvantage, they could perhaps be like they would be bolstered by you taking the drac and helping them. You also aren't really sure how much.
I'm not going to take drac in front of Lycanon.
That makes sense. So I think observing it and realizing what's going on, that's a very good point as well. You instead, and it kind of hurts you to do this, but instead you disappear into the shadows to go try and make your way to the bar. You might be of some help if you're able to like bust in from the front and help later, but you could turn the tables for Ridley and Everett, but there's nothing you can do to help the wolves who begin a desperate battle with the orphans amidst a ring of fire.
Oh boy.
Ridley, you were looking for a sign. A bunch of explosions sound in the distance.
And, let's open up that fence.
amazing. So are you trying to do this quietly? Like, is this still stealth or is it kind of a weapons-free moment?
This is still stealth because he doesn't know if somebody's going to kind of rip through and go over there. So he's trying to cover himself.
Give me stealth and strength. What a weird combo.
It's very Ridley.
Yep. Everett, hearing these explosions in the distance, would you take a shot? Or would you still...
No, I don't want to blow our cover.
Fair.
Yeah.
Two successes.
Okay. You begin to... Yeah, two successes is great. You cut a hole through the fence, and you turn and gesture back to Everett to move up.
And I'll stop aiming and I'll start moving up.
Okay. So the two of you have reached the edge of the junkyard. You're kind of hunkered down behind a car. Now people are starting to panic. Like, just the alarm wasn't enough, but the explosions are definitely of concern. So people are swarming and starting to like mount up and rush. You see a significant number of orphans leave.
Right.
On bikes. There is a back door that seems to lead to the kitchen of the Oliver Twist, or there's the giant garage door that seems to lead into the basement. Which one do you attempt?
My vote would be basement, I think. It'd be Ridley kind of gesturing towards the basement, unless Everett's got a disagreement.
No, Everett's fine with the basement.
Okay. Can you guys roll me stealth checks, please? Stealth, and probably at this point...
I was going to say, how many people are between us and there, Tom?
Not that many, actually. You know what? You actually don't need to roll for this. They're all leaving. Like, there's explosions. They're mounting up. Okay, cool. Like, it's like sneaking into an army base as people mobilize. It's like no one's looking for attackers. They're, like, going to solve a problem. Okay, so you make it to the garage door. The garage door is open because bikes are coming out, So you get close, kind of hunker down behind a giant stack of tires. How do you want to try and get in there, knowing that bikes are irregularly leaving? They are starting to be fewer and fewer. You get the sense that whatever bikes are usable down there are likely leaving now.
What kind of debris is around us? Like, could Everett grab a tire?
Yep.
He'd want to grab a tire and just throw it to land flat underneath the garage door so that it stops and you can basically get your fingers under it and lift it up when we're done. He just wants it like near the corner, near
the
wall.
Give me dexterity and athletics, please. As you discus this tire down.
And athletics. Wow, I've got more in athletics than I thought. Two tens, but not on a hunger die. So two successes.
Critical success.
They're critical successes.
All right. That tire, you throw it for a second, it like flips up on the rim and starts rolling, and it's the worst. Then it hits the wall and flops down perfectly. The garage door closes onto it, but no one seems to be minding it because they've all just escaped on motorcycles.
Okay.
So the two of you make your way down. You're able to sort of sneak in under that. You find yourselves in a large garage space. There are a couple of mechanics who are sort of hunched over a series of monitors, a couple of which show a battle, scenes of a battle. This seems to be where like a lot of the security lives. So kind of big bay of monitors. They're having a very animated conversation about it being like, the money pit of all places. What a dumb place to make war on. Jesus. Could have at least hit deals dollars for you.
Ridley would like to kill them.
As you say. Okay. All right. I was going to talk, but now Ridley's already on the move.
Oh, yeah. No, no, no. They're dead.
Hello, Gav. It's your boy Ridley, and I'm here to talk to you about maybe a way you should be contributing to this little organisation. Everyone knows, as you look around, there's a lot of bear boys, and you know, to be a bear boy, you got to be a bear, and you got to be, well, not exactly a boy, but you got... The important thing is, you got to pay your fucking dues, is what you got to do. And right now, I just know from looking at the numbers, there are a lot more fucking people out there than there are inside my fucking gang. And what I'm saying is, if you want to join up and get access to me and all the cool fucking toys and other fucking treats I've got for all you little bear boys and girls and theys and thems and fucking alls out there, go to patreon.com/dumdumdice. DUMBDUMBDICE. You do that, you're on the inside. Come talk to me on a Patreon exclusive Discord. Why don't you throw some names into the show? Why don't you build an NPC to join my fucking gang? I'm just saying, if you sign up, you won't regret it. And if you don't sign up, maybe you fucking will.
Dum-Dums and Dice would like to welcome you to the grim darkness of the 41st millennium. I am Inquisitor Caveat Ventus, Keeper of the Inquisition's Black Library, and I'm releasing my report on the Valentine Heresy. It's an actual play podcast set in the Genesis adaptation of Warhammer 40,000's Dark Heresy RPG. Join Ryan LaPlante as Inquisitor Lucius Valentine, and Laura Elizabeth and Tyler Hewitt as hive-bred siblings Lyric and Alto, as this unlikely trio try to save the Emperor from a cabal of mysterious enemies in a series created by Games Master Tom McGee. Can these unlikely heroes survive in a galaxy where there is only war? Find out in the first episode of Warhammer 40,000, The Valentine Heresy. Available now.
Ryan, explain what happens. They are not looking to fight anyone. They're just hanging out.
Yeah, no, if they're down there, I think it's like Ridley just kind of almost slowly walks up, but he has to do a little bit on tiptoe so his Italian heels don't make a sound. And then just while they're like talking,
Flintstone bowling toes?
Yeah. Like, and then it's just both hands with the blade, like the little bladed fingertips out, just wham through the back of their skull, kind of all four fingers as four blades, just right in back of head, out where eyes are.
Mm-hmm.
And then just withdraw and kind of let them both fall to the floor.
Great. The garage is yours. Do you open a garage business now? Is that the next logical step?
Yeah.
So the garage is a large space, obviously, like berths for motorcycles, all that sort of jazz. However, against one wall, there are also a number of crates that are clearly filled with drac. This also seems to be a distribution center.
Okay.
There's also a door, a heavy, heavy door that is clearly soundproofed that leads into the strip club proper.
What's going on with this security feed that these guys were watching? Is this like a security hub here?
Yes.
Ridley would send Everett over to look at that because he can't fucking read. And Ridley, I think, would be looking if there were motorcycles, if there was any big, heavy shit he could just block the garage with. So if somebody comes down thinking they're going to get in,
yeah, you could absolutely drag some shit over.
Yeah.
There is also a service elevator and a flight of stairs leading down. Like the stairs go up and down, the elevator goes up and down. The door leading back to the club leads to the stairs.
Okay. After he's blocked the garage, Ridley will try to block the elevator. These are his plans.
Sure. Yeah, you can do that. On the security feed, mm-hmm. you have feed of various places. You've got feed of the battle, obviously. You've got a feed of the club itself, which a lot of the bikers seem agitated, but there also do seem to be some just like rough and tumble types who are there for a good time. Mm-hmm. There's a definite sense of like, everything is fine. Keep drinking. Like, ladies and gentlemen, keep dancing.
Yeah.
You can see that the strippers have not stopped. They're doing their thing. It is a large space. So you get sort of a sense of that from like the VIP angle. You can see armed guards, but they're all kind of like moving to the front, and there is just that sense of like, if this gets any closer, this is going to be a real fucking problem for us. But otherwise, everyone seems content. Most notably for you, Ridley, you can see the guy who's clearly in charge, who you'd assume to be Pierre Belmer. He's wearing like a Quebec flag bandana wrapped around his head. He's wearing sunglasses inside. Trim beard, he's wearing a leather jacket, but over like, you know, a button up shirt with a tie. A vest, so like no arms, over a suit jacket. Like, he's clearly trying to run the I'm a cool mafia boss, but also I'm a biker guy. It does not work. It is a dumb look, and he is just trying his hardest. But he's like yelling to people. Definitely not like a sit in the booth kind of major domo being like, yeah, do the work, boys. It's like he's up front kind of yelling to people while also like gesturing to service staff to bring the drinks faster. You also get a feed of a large dark room where you can see a number of chemistry equipment set up. It seems to be a stone room. There are a bunch of stone coffins and almost like those inlays that you'd see in like catacombs. from the grainy security camera footage, you think you can make out a massive twisted statue. And there seem to be people in hazmat suits attending to the statue and carrying away flasks.
All right, so what you got, Everett?
It looks like they're fortifying the front. That distraction's working. Hang on, I'm going to text Iris and let her know that the front is a bad way to come in.
I want to send her a text message. Just say, like, they're fortifying the front. Try to come in through the side or the back.
Yeah, tell her to pass that along to Dr. Skull, you know?
Right, right.
And I'll just say, like, add to the text, like, tell Dr. Skull.
Everett, does this place, you got a fucking computer, I don't know how to use anything. Does this place have, like, a sprinkler system in case of a fire?
I mean, I would assume so, just given that it's a building that had to meet code at some point.
Is there a way for you to find out if the fucking water reservoir is down here?
And like Everett's like not great with computers. it didn't occur to him to like, he would have just like looked for it physically. Like, he would not be keen to, I don't know. I would strongly doubt his capabilities of finding it on a computer.
Okay. Then let's just look around. Tom, so is it down
he's just
here?
Like confused.
It is. And more importantly, because you're in a garage space, it's easy enough to find the tanks because the sprinkler system is very clearly installed here as like a suppressant if needed.
Okay, I kind of had a very evil fucked up idea, but I'd like to run it by you.
Jocelyn St. James special. We get the gasoline out of all these motorcycles and run it into the sprinkler system and set everyone on fire like at the nightclub.
No, we can't do that because we need a building because we want to run this place. Different idea. We open them up. And we put all the drac in it, and then we spray the crowd, and they all frenzy and kill each other.
Well, that will most likely kill Iggy, although my fire idea would also kill Iggy.
Well, I don't know, because he might be up in that fucking spooky statue room, and he just points at the image. He's like, if I was a shithead, that's where I'd be.
I think it's a good backup plan. I think we load the drac into it, and then we can set it off if and when we need to. That makes sense.
Yeah, my only concern is if we do that and the wrong gun goes off, we all get sprayed with Draken and you and I are in the middle of the frenzy.
Well,
if we do this, we're down here where there's no frenzy.
Well, I look up, is the sprinkler system here?
Oh,
as well?
Yeah.
It's like
it's reached all the rooms except probably the catacombs room.
It's going to put out all the fires, right? It's okay, it's going to go everywhere.
What if we go into the elevator?
Elevator could work. Any floor we come out on will be a complete drac massacre.
No, but it's like a service elevator, so we could just leave the fucking door shut. And then we wait till it's sprayed, and then if it's on the ground, it's on the ground. We won't drink groundwater.
Yeah, it could work. Look, let me clear it with Iris. Her brother's in here. This was not part of the plan.
Yeah, no,
that's
just a
good
idea.
Just see what she says. And I'm going to try and call Iris if she hasn't texted me back.
Yeah. Iris, you're near the front entrance, the Oliver Twist, with Dr. Skull, who is just muttering about different bodies he could try and take. But he's like, just remember, though, the minute I die, like, I can't really control it. So, like, let's just make sure there's lots of unconscious or dead people nearby. I don't know. This plan seems like it may have some issues. Also, are you okay? You kind of look crispy.
I'm fine.
Your phone rings, and it is Everett.
Hi.
Iris, we've got an idea to rig this whole building up to have it rain drac on everyone. Wanted to run that by you first. It'll turn this place into a real bloodbath, and
yeah, but
you
know, like
we can't guarantee Iggy's safety.
Yeah,
but
that's a challenge.
Make it easy for us to clear out.
But there's like a lot of fucking people, though.
It's just
quiet. I will pass you the phone if you want to talk to her.
No, just put it on speaker.
That's all you're hearing. Complaining about phone usage, and then finally it's on speaker. And he's like,
well, there's just a lot of people upstairs, and there's some fucking statue room, so we could put Drac in a sprinkler system and hide in the elevator, but we don't want to do anything too fucked up without your permission, because we're all in this together.
Honestly, at this point, just do what you need to do. I'm not doing great.
How are the werewolves doing?
They're in trouble.
Well, that explosion was them, right? Like, or was that?
No.
That was the orphans? They started with explosions?
The explosions occurred, yes.
Oh, Iris, can you roll me an awareness and wits, please?
Damn, they really stepped up their response to when we tried to lure two guards over.
Yeah, these fuckers are clever, which is why I think Frenzy Room is a nice way to clean out some of the chaff.
Two successes.
Iris, the explosions happened before the orphans arrived.
The explosions, I tell them that.
Yep.
So it wasn't the orphans doing. Something else blew up.
Something blew up many cars.
That is fucked up. You just hear Ridley saying as he's dragging Drac over, just dumping it into the reservoirs.
Yeah.
We might be dealing with some bigger things here. And
look, I only got like a high concept kind of overview of that werewolf situation, but do you know who you can trust there and who might be double-crossing the pack or whatever? Is there somebody vying for alpha status?
I mean, this might just be my own shit, but Selena doesn't seem entirely okay with helping us out.
Well, did she get hurt when all the explosions went off?
I don't remember.
She did not. She came to your aid.
She didn't, but she did help me briefly.
None of the wolves, in fact, got injured. Only you did.
Seemed to be like someone was trying to get me specifically.
Well, and the first person to check on you was Celine. So, I mean, that's possible. Or maybe they know about the demon. Who knows? Okay, so...
Are you alone now, Iris?
If you can call escorting Dr. Skull alone, yes.
All right. Might be best.
Hi, guys.
If you make
it's me,
your way
Dr. Skull.
Oh, God. It might be best if you make your way down to the garage where we are. I don't know who you can trust in that pack.
Sounds good. They're there fighting, and I'm here walking.
All right. I come?
No, yeah, you sure. have to yes. go blow up.
No, we can't get the bomb inside if they're coming around east. If he waits at the front, we could send him up. So bring him with you. That's fine. Wait outside the garage. We're going to do the frenzy thing, and then we'll bring you in when it's safe.
Okay.
Sounds good. At which point, dump, drag.
All right. You look to Everett. Iris, you're standing outside, but you can feel this important moment occurring. Ridley, do you frenzy the entire bar with Drac?
After all of us are out of the way? Yeah.
Weren't expecting that, were you, Tommy?
No, but it's good. For years afterward, people will talk about what they think happened that night at the Oliver Twist. Now, that was back before new management took over. And it was back before the other unpleasantness that was to come. But still, it was a good indicator, weirdly. And if people had been paying proper attention, maybe, just maybe, by observing what happened at the Twist that night, they would have known what was coming. But the one thing everyone can agree on is... if a nightmare could come to life, it was being in that bar that night. Some survived. A few of the people working managed to get out. But mostly they talk of blood, of the smell of guts and organs, the sounds of feral screams. And the one thing everyone who survived can agree on was the sound of laughter. Just a deep booming laughter. Echoing off the walls. No one could pinpoint where it was coming from, but everyone who was there heard it. Everyone who survived heard it. And the dead, they certainly heard it. In the small service elevator, Everett and Ridley, you did not hear it. But outside, Iris, faintly, you sure as shit could. After 2 hours of blood and carnage, the three of you begin to explore the wreckage. There are certainly feral people to put down, feral vamps to put down, but armed as you are, you make short work of them. they can't really stand up to you doing a coordinated clearance assault through the building. As you make your way through the bar, a feral Pierre Belmare leaps at you. Ridley, what do you do to the once powerful leader of the orphans as he does so?
Ridley would try to take this guy alive. Because if we can get info out of him, we know what the fuck is going on. Because this plan did effectively destroy our knowledge of Drac.
I can safely say he is not in any shape to talk, as he is foaming at the mouth with frothy blood, screaming and trying to claw your eyes out.
Well, then Ridley tries to grab him by the throat and stops him, but forgets he's wearing his murder gloves. So his fingers just punch through the guy's throat in like a burning heat. And he ends up grabbing him by the spine and being like, oh, I wanted you to be fucking alive. And it like sticks in the glove a little bit and he just has to shake him off, embarrassed, to the side.
His corpse sort of schlucks off your glove. It's mostly at this point wading through leather and guts as the various coats and gear are there. You make short work of the remaining vampires and those who have become vampiric before investigating deeper into the building. Deep below, you find a crypt and the foundations of an ancient church. The vampires who called this place home clearly kind of made their home down here, deep underground.
Quick question, Tom. I'm imagining no sprinkler system down here. Is this just like a
crypt? No sprinkler. No, they would have installed it because they're doing chemical shit. So they got fucked up too. Unfortunately,
did the hazmat suits retain their sanity, or were they killed by ferals?
They got ripped up real fast by the rest of their fellow workers. You find their bodies kind of around again, same sort of deal. There's some slinking around in the catacombs, dealing with the remaining vamps. You also find some the clearly everyone was out and about today, so there aren't like just sleeping orphans hanging out. Spraying system, like the suppressant system, is only kind of over the central chemical space, which makes sense because it's like crudely installed. But you can see that they've actually been making Drac here. And as you approach the statue, which is one of those like just weird, like Cronenbergian monsters of twisted shapes. You can make out eyes, a series of six eyes in various places, each weeping a dark black liquid that was clearly being collected by the now dead chemists in the hazmat suits on the ground, clawed to shreds by their compatriots. You also find the body of Iggy Dunn, who has been ravaged by claws and teeth. He is holding a still-lit cigarette in one hand that, at a glance, he seems to have lit after being attacked. Iris, looking down on him, you feel one of those last remaining humanity touchstones slip away. What are your thoughts as you look down on your dead brother?
I mean, complete grief and sorrow. I mean, he was a shithead, but I tried to protect him as best I could.
Fucking hell. Aris, I am so sorry. I was hoping a fucking hazmat suit to keep him together. I don't know why they put sprayers in a fucking bedroom. Fuck.
It's okay. It was just literally just the one situation I couldn't get him out of.
The statue is clearly that of Metathiax. And as you look around, you realize that the orphans have clearly been manufacturing the drug down here. A lot of the equipment has been destroyed. There doesn't seem to be like recipes kicking around. This was clearly a kind of a Walter White situation of like, you know the recipe, you do the work. So unfortunately, a lot of your leads die here. But so it would seem does the most immediate supply of Drac. There is one other thing you find down here of note, something that raises some rather important questions. You find a case tucked away in a dark, dark corner of Bouchard Brothers maple syrup that seems to have a slightly darker tinge than syrup ought to. It takes 2 days to clean up the bar. It takes 2 days to recover from the battle. The blood talons have disappeared, those that remain. They are not returning your calls, Iris. But you have successfully taken the bar. And it shall become your home base now here in Montreal. Montcalm is elated when he gets the news and arrives in person in a long black limo. The prince of the Camarilla of Montreal steps in just like just sort of steps into the guts and just says, "Ugh, haven't seen this much since the Plains of Abraham." And he looks to everyone as like, "This is a major important event, right?" And no one acknowledges him. He says, "Ugh, fine." And he sort of raises out his arms and he says, "So you have succeeded where so many have failed. You have wiped this Sabbat stain from our fair city. The Iris Dunn Coterie has proven itself. You have my thanks." Is there anything you immediately, how do you, the three of you respond? This is again, a few days later. So you've rested up a bit. There are, I'm sure, other things you've done, but for the purposes of the immediate moment.
I don't think it feels like Everett's place to speak right now. It's the Iris Dunn Coterie and he doesn't really feel strongly about this prince one way or another. It was just something that he was tasked to do or, you know, face death. So he did it.
I think Ridley's been in a fog for like the last 48 hours. Like, I don't think he has anything to say because that wind didn't feel good and he's not used to winds not feeling good. So he's just a bit of a shell of himself, I think, at this point.
Cool. And Iris?
I think as politely as she can, because she's still like dealing with loss, like as everyone else is just kind of says, "Well, this is what you requested of us and we paid a big price."
He actually looks a little thoughtful at that. And sort of draws his mouth and he says, yes, I was sorry to hear about your brother, Miss Dunn. That is never easy, no matter how old or ancient we get. Well, no matter how you came to it, you have my thanks and you have your corner of the city. Mr. Beef, I understand you will be taking over the criminal operations of this part of town. I look forward to working closely with you to continue to secure our foothold here.
All right.
And once again, you have a prince's thanks. That is no small matter. If you need me, I shall assist you if I can. And he turns to leave. And just as he starts to go out the door, he turns back and says, on that note, Mr. Beef, I believe, you've been searching for a Sylvana, I believe her name is.
Now that would be true. That's like the first glimmer of Ridley's sanity returning in 48 hours.
And he nods and says, some of my men have heard rumors that would perhaps be of some interest and some value to you. I'll be sure to have them pass it along. After all, I would hate to see more family members of the Dunn Coterie meet a tragic fate. You have my thanks and good luck. And with that, he leaves. The days go by in a bit of a fog. You leave the space while it gets cleaned, naturally. You ignore several calls from the Bouchard brothers. You also find, perhaps alarmingly, some crossbow bolts amongst the dead some who seem to have been dispatched with great violence and great prejudice. Everett, you see the handiwork of Jocelyn St. James written large amidst this space. Though she's not been in contact, her calling card is clear. Montreal begins to return somewhat to normal as the days go on. The city still mourns, remains in lockdown, and word from the Camarilla is that the Second Inquisition has sunk its talons deep into the city. The threat of the Sabbat has been sorted, but now the greater threat of the Inquisition is present. And the general order is to lay low. Ryan, you can repatch the Bear Boys now. With the biker bar now in your possession, the Bear Boys can either become a biker gang again, or they can remain the Silver Foxes. What do you do?
From the conversations he's had with them, they want to be a biker gang again. Like, they seem more comfortable with that than being fancy rich dudes. So I think he would patch them in to be the Bear Boys again. But if they want to maintain their alt identities, like live their day, you know, day life as rich white shitty people, and nightlife as, you know, biker selves, that would be up to them. Like, he'd be fine with that. But having the Bear Boys exist, I think, is a good symbol. And he does need a group to maintain his hold on the criminal empire. He can't just be Ridley and whoever Ridley calls that day. Like, there needs to be a reputation.
Totally. So Chonky, with a grin on his face, happily accepts this calling, and slowly but surely they begin to rebuild the bar. What do you rechristen it as?
Dig Old Bix.
Dig Old Bix?
Dig Old Bix.
Dig Old Bix.
It's like Tig Old Bitties, but the reverse.
I gotcha.
Yeah, I almost feel like I've heard that before. I don't know if we've used that already or not.
Not on this show, but probably one of our other ones.
It's also a subtle thing for him, because he exists here as Ridley Beef, but his original name is Richard Darkly, where he was known as Dick Darkly. So there's a little bit in there just for him.
As you observe the new sign being lowered over the entranceway, a woman wearing sunglasses and just a bright sundress just sort of sidles up to you and passes you a brown envelope. It says, courtesy of the prince. Best of luck with your mom.
Well, thank you. And then he'll open it up and see what is there.
It is a folded map of Alberta with a red circle drawn around a small town outside a major city center. And just the words, good luck.
Interesting.
Everett, you sit in the garage space of the bar. It's been a rough few days for you as well. This was a lot of whole-scale murder, and there were clearly innocent people in the bar when this happened. You can feel the last vestiges of your humanity beginning to slip away. But for the first time in a long time, you have a friend sitting next to you. And Harvey looks longingly at the cup of coffee he cannot drink. And he just says, Everett, I got to ask a kind of an important question, maybe not a pleasant question, but an important one.
What's that, Harv?
Are we going to be okay being these things, being like this?
You want the short answer or the long answer?
And he looks down at the mug and he says, well, given that I throw up blood every time I try and drink this, seems like I got a bottomless cup. So maybe you better give me the long answer.
Long answer is, we'll be all right. It's going to take a long time. But we'll be all right. We'll find peace, Harv.
Well, that might be the first piece of good news I've heard in a while. Hey, on that note, I got a new routine I want to run by. Is that all right? He pulls out a folded piece of paper.
Sure. Harv, you go right on ahead. I'm all ears.
All right. So have you ever noticed that kind drive their cars like this? And he minds driving a car. He's like, but kindred drive their cars like this. And he smiles and he says, I'm working on a vampire set. Everett, you realize you may have just agreed to a one-way trip to hell. Iris, Iggy is dead. The bar has been taken. The Blood Talons have cut off communication. And with them, Emily has disappeared. All you received was a reaction to your final message to her. And it came 3 days after the attack on the bar. So you're aware that she's still out there. But it was a single heart. And her phone number now seems to be disconnected. Walter Sims will be coming for you in a few days to begin your worldwide tour. And to take you away from coterie business for a time, which in a way will actually be a tremendous relief. You know, still leaving a lot of unfinished business. Do you have any final words for Everett and Ridley before you, as you're kind of getting ready to leave? Any last things you want to sort out with them before you go? You'll still be able to keep in contact with them, obviously. Like, you're not going to be off the grid, but you're basically leaving the city and the coterie in their hands.
Just saying that I appreciate them, that they're kind of the only family I've got left, as fucked up as our little group is, and that I want them to not take too many risks because I want them to stick around.
Ridley and Everett, do you have any words for Iris before she leaves?
Oh, you stay safe on the road. And if you need to, make a ghoul out of someone who's very strong and very violent, so you've got your own little mini Ridley as you're going, because we know you don't do the fighting thing and you need someone who does, because you like to tussle deep down in your heart. And that's why, you know, we love each other. And it's like family where we hate each other and we love each other, and this will be forever, so we better get used to it, is what I'm saying. I'd like to be pissed off at you in about 200 years and then another 1,000 after that, so let's make it happen.
Deal.
You take care of yourself. You give us a call anytime you need anything.
Yeah, Everett, I'll text you so you can speak it to Ridley.
Perfect, right, and I'll have strip club money, so I can send some bear boys to wherever you fucking are if you give me about 24 hours notice.
Perfect.
And with that, Iris, you take the bag that you packed badly. Normally, Emily does the packing, so like it is not great. As the car Sims sent for you pulls up, to your horror, as you leave your duplex, there are paparazzi, and there are already news stories circulating that Dedrick is sending you with great glee about Iris Dunn's international tour and all the great things that will come from that. Shouldering past the camera people, you get into the vehicle and you settle back into the plush seats. You kind of look at your water bottle, your soda stream that you filled with blood for the road. And you kind of watch out the window as Montreal begins to pull away on your way to the airport. Just before you reach the airplane, your phone buzzes. And you open it to a text message from no number. And the words, Iris, help. I think I'm a fucking ghost now. Iggy.
Fuck. Of course he is.
With Iris gone, Everett and Ridley The city is yours. Ridley, you begin to lay down your foundations, but you also know that your mom is out there and that Damian Black and the Notte Nostra are working against you, but that you won't be able to go yourself to save her. Luckily, inside the envelope, there is a job posting. Job posting for a local sheriff's department. And looking up from it, you see Everett very patiently listening to Harvey and responding in a nice Western drawl. And slowly but surely, a plan begins to form. All it means is you might have to convince him to go west.
This episode of Blood and Syrup features the voices of Ryan LaPlante at The Ryan LaPlante on Twitter, Tyler Hewitt at Tyler_Hewitt on Twitter, Megan Miles at Maggie Miles on Twitter, and storyteller Tom McGee at McGeeTD on Twitter. This episode's sound was edited and mixed by Laura Hamstra, and all of Dum Dums and Dice's logos are by Decapitated Markers at Decapitated Marker on Twitter. That's MRKR. Our theme songs are What's Really Going On Right Now by Chase Allen Willis and Traffic by High Angle, and all our ads use the tracks No Control and Chiefs by Jazzar, that's J-A-H-Z-Z-A-R. All of their music is available on freemusicarchive.org. When it comes to Dum Dums and Dice, you can visit our website at dumdumdice.com. Our Twitter and Instagram are at dumdumdice, and on Facebook at facebook.com/dumdumdice. We've also got merchandise at redbubble.com/people/dumdumdice. And most importantly, you can join our Patreon of Darkness at patreon.com/dumdumdice. That's DUMBDUMBDICE. Sleep well, children of the night.
Spooky. Dum Dums and Dice has to give a special thank you to the supreme beings of our Patreon at this time. Christian Menicola, Long Long, the Half-Blind Prophet, James Cuellar, Charles Grams, Christopher Little, Sue One, George Dolby, One True Artistry, Orion Birchfield, Lord of Bradovic, Noel Lewis, Scott Garland, Anthony Griffin, Chet Awesome Laser, Jordan Neesmith, Benjamin V, Gavin and Abby McDonald, Taryn Hefner, Cade Peters, Richard Cranium, Christian Mendez, Anna Zed, Eric Williams, Logan, Fire Unfriendly, Great Dane, Acrix, and Jill and Noel LaPlante. If you want your name to be added to this list, you can join our Patreon too at patreon.com/dumdumdice. Thanks to them, and a little bit of thanks to you.
The Fable and Folly Network, where fiction producers flourish.